think we will go ahead and get started since we have a full house and a lot to talk about in a relatively brief period of time. I'm Lenny Mendoza, I'm your host and moderator, and look forward to the conversation this evening. I will introduce our guests in a moment, then we'll have a bit of a conversation, and then we'll open it up for Q&A in the audience. We're gonna try and wrap up by 7:30, in part because I need to turn the facility because there's a group meeting in here at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Crazy. So we want to make sure our team has some time to do that. And as always, if you'd like to stay for dinner, it's at Half Moon Bay Brewing Company, and 10% of the proceeds of your dinner will go to the Coastside Victims Fund, which was recently set up in partnership with the City of Half Moon Bay, Mavericks Community Foundation, and the San Mateo Credit Union. And 100% of the proceeds for that go directly to the victims and their families. We'll be doing that for all the brews and views for the remainder of the year. And if you're inclined, there's more information on the table over there. So for those of you who were here a few weeks ago when we had a conversation about Coastside infrastructure, we didn't expect that the power would be out again in advance of this one, or that it would be actually apparently the coldest day, meaning the lowest, highest temperature in San Francisco history yesterday at 48 degrees. The last time it was that cold was 1880. So our theme here is that we're going back to when Lincoln was president right after. I'm glad we're doing this inside. It is freezing out there. And I don't know if any of you got, I don't know if it was snow, hail, or something else, but there was stuff on the ground this morning. A lot of this. And so, and it's, you know, obviously timely and important in that context that we're talking about making sure that everyone who lives here has adequate housing. And so our conversation today is about what can we do to help ensure that we have appropriate, affordable housing for everyone on the coast, with a particular emphasis, it was true before, it was even more pronounced after the horrible events on January 23rd, that our farm worker population has a challenge with housing. So we have a great panel to talk with us about that this evening. And I'm going to introduce them and then start the conversation and take my glasses off so I can read my notes. And just to the right of me, who's going to start us off, is our fabulous Vice Mayor of Half Moon Bay, Joaquin Jimenez. Joaquin was in 2020 elected as the first Mexican immigrant to serve on the Half Moon Bay City Council, where, as I said, he's now the Vice Mayor. He's been an advocate and organizer for the community for over 20 years. He's the Farm Worker Program Director for ALAS, a Half Moon Bay based nonprofit that you all know that's doing fabulous work for cultural and social services serving the Coastside community. He was also a farm worker and outreach and liaison at Puente before that. So thank you for joining us, Joaquin. Next, Joaquin, is Serena Yip. Serena, thanks for joining us. Serena is a project manager at MidPen Housing, the nonprofit collaborative that does affordable housing, developing, owning, and managing, and service providing. It's based in Foster City, but has a lot of work on the coast. She's worked in new construction rehabilitation of over 600 homes. And prior to MidPen, she worked at the Housing Leadership Council of San Mateo County and serves currently on their board of directors. She grew up in Pacifica and now lives in San Bruno with her family. So Serena, thank you for joining us this evening. Last but not least is Gopi Mittal, the CEO of Lifeboat Ventures. Gopi, who's familiar to many of us at Brews and Views, is a serial entrepreneur and managing partner and CEO of Lifeboat Ventures, which operates ADU Works. ADU Works supplies pre-designed, pre-approved, and assembled on-site accessory dwelling units, which you will be talking about this evening. It's Gopi's the founder and CEO of Cellarstone, a Silicon Valley-based company that provides solutions in sales performance management, and he's been an entrepreneur in a number of other ventures and is also a very active leader on the coast. So Gopi, thanks for joining us as well. And just for all of your awareness, we are being videoed by Coastside Bus, so thank you for doing that. And we are being live streamed, hopefully, on Facebook Live, and it will be up on the Half Moon Bay Brewing Company's website as well. So for those of you who want to point to people who weren't here to have the conversation. So that's why we're using the mics, and when we go to audience questions, we'll hand the mic to you as well. So I'm going to start with you, Joaquin. Mm-hmm. So you've been deeply involved in the farm worker community on the coast for a very long time, and the issues that we're talking about are not new. They were obviously
in the spotlight after the horrible events of January 23rd. But let me ask you two questions. First, just tangibly for the, so folks know, how are the families who were affected housing situation at this point in time? Are they in a place where they're stable, or where are we?
First of all, thank you for the invitation and to be able to share with you, what we have been doing here at the coast for several years. This is nothing new for us. It's been going for a long time. And it is unfortunate that it took a tragedy like this on the 23rd, to give us, to put us in a position we are right now, where things are gonna be happening, faster than usual. So the families are safe. Right now, a collaboration of the city staff with nonprofits. We have been working with the families, providing the services from food, rights to the Mexican consulate, to the clinics, mental health, everything, to work, to school, for the children. We are working with the families to pick up the children, to take them to school, and then bring them back to their home. So they're staying in the area. We see them often. We go to the farm about twice a week. We have been visiting both farms now. Before the incident, we, alas, only visited the mushroom farm in 92. So we were familiar with those workers. But for now, we believe everybody's safe, receiving their services.
And to follow up on that, they're short-term in a stable situation, but still housing insecure for the intermediate term, is there a place where they can go back to or go to afterwards?
The short-term, and again, the city, in collaboration with the county, San Mateo County, and our nonprofits are working to find them a more medium-term, housing, for the families, places where they, it depends if they have families, children that go to school, something, a place close to schools or close to halfway to their work, to make it easier for them, more sustainable for the families.
And then more broadly on the issue of farm worker housing and affordable housing on the coast, you've been at this topic for a long time. You obviously have visited a large number of the folks that are working here and their living conditions. Just love to hear you talk a little bit more about that, about what's the situation. You're also an elected official now. Thank you for doing that. And so where are we in trying to make sure that we're, having opportunities for people to affordably live on the coast?
Yes, so we have a lot of work. And if you do your research, you can find on Google articles on our local paper, San Mateo, journal, daily journal, and other newspapers that go back over a decade about the living conditions for the farm workers here in the coast. So I am pretty familiar with pretty much about every farm in the coast. We have been doing this for several years. I try to maintain a good relationship with the owners, with the farmers, and for us to give the approval to visit the farms. I don't know if you're familiar with this, an article that just came out in the early times. It's called the plantation mentality. It's pretty bad. And it's not only here in our county, it's in other farm worker communities as well. It happens all over the country. So it's nothing new. I've been doing this, I've been advocating for farm workers for over 20 years. I started doing this since I was in college, learning about the different areas and coming back to Half Moon Bay to work. I knew there was going to be a process to get things done. Life has put me in a position, to be able to advocate and with more support, from my community, because this is not something that it's a small group doing this. It's a big group. It's a lot of people doing. But it takes tragedies like this. First of all, it was the pandemic. That put the spotlight on the farm workers, being essential workers. We have been going to city council meetings for a long time. you know, talking about issues, you know, that our living conditions in Half Moon Bay, not only at the farms, but in our community, you know, how crowded, you know, we live. There's been a lot of articles on it. So this is nothing new. But, you know, we have, you know, community members, I'm going to say, you know, that, you know, they're in denial that our community can be living situations like that. You know, and that's not fair. You know, I mean, I'm not really good with numbers, you know. Don't ask me my multiple table, you know, because, you know, multiplication, I'm not going to know. But if you look into the economy, you know, of the coast, right? Take a good weekend out of the year, in the summer weekend. If you have no essential workers to work, you know, at your restaurant, you know, other businesses, half of them is going to go broke. You know, and that's no question about it. One of the reporters checked the, how much, you know, what was the income coming in, you know, for, you know, from farming, for the farming industry in the coast, you know, San Mateo County, comparing 2018 to 2020. It's millions of dollars in difference, right? It just goes, those 2 years. So now think about it. You know, if we don't have housing for essential workers, including farm workers, service industry, hotels, restaurants, you know, landscaping, all that, who's gonna take care of Half Moon Bay? It's pretty obvious. It's pretty obvious. And I know there's restrictions, there's limitations, you know, being here in the coast, you know, the Coastal Commission, but still we have to find a way, you know, to be able to provide housing for the people that we need, right, to take care of our community, you know, and they need us right now, so we need to move faster. We need to get things done. You know, we have a young leader right here. A ver, Cristal, párate. Cristal, you know, young girl, you know, she's been advocating for housing. Right? This is how bad it is. You know, growing up, I grew up in a household, you know, in Half Moon Bay. At one point, a 3-bedroom apartment, just think about it, how unhealthy it is. 21 people in with a 3-bedroom apartment. Is that healthy at all? Kids, adults, not everybody's related with our living conditions in Half Moon Bay, you know, in the coast overall. It's really bad. You know, and some of you know about it, but it's still in denial that our community is living like that. So that's why we have been advocating strongly. It's gonna be a year next month, you know, that we took the streets, you know, to do vigils, you know, demanding housing. You know, at one point, I remember saying, we're not asking for housing, now we are demanding. You know, the housing that we needed, you know, years back. So it's just about paying attention, you know, to our community, taking care of our community like they take care of us.
Great. And I'm going to come back to you on sort of what we can do about this, both collectively and individually. But Serena, I want to turn to you for a moment because you've had a lot of experience trying to help bring housing to fruition, both on the coast and more broadly at MidPen. And you're also involved with a project in Moss Beach, which I understand, which I'm sure you can explain some more, recently got a substantial commitment from the state to help support building some of that housing. But tell us a little bit about what MidPen Housing does, what you've done on the coast, and how do you think about the opportunity to build more housing on the coast?
Sure. So for those who don't know, MidPen Housing is based in San Mateo County. We're over the hill in Foster City. We have, count really quick, 3 properties in Half Moon Bay. Moon Ridge, which is for farm workers, Half Moon Village, which is 160 homes for seniors, and then Main Street Park, which is for individuals and families. We are developers and owners for the long term of our properties. We also provide the property management services and the resident programming. And what that means is, you know, it depends on the population and the property type, but for a family property, that's usually an after-school program for the kids that are school-aged. It's computer training for the working adults. It's any sort of health, wellness, or economic improvement support that we can provide on site at their homes. So MidPen also, MidPen also has a property that's in the pipeline in Moss Beach that Lenny just mentioned. That one is also going to be for families and individuals with a percentage, 25%, that's 18 units for farm worker housing. And because he mentioned it, we did recently get awarded a financial loan from the state for farm worker housing for those 18 units. That was something we applied for about a year ago because, as the vice mayor mentioned, the county has been working on the farm worker issues for a while. Farm workers are considered a special needs population because they're disproportionately affected and impacted by substandard living conditions, low income wages, instability in their in the nature of their work. So they are considered special needs, and there was a fund that the state had targeting housing for adequate housing for farm workers. So we did apply to that about a year ago, and the county has a farm worker advisory committee that they formed, I think, in 2014, that did a study and looked at what are the wages our farm workers are making, what's the demand for housing here. And I believe the study found that there's a shortage and a demand of about 1,000 to 1,400, something like that, homes for our farm workers on the coast.
That's obviously a huge shortage, and it's not going to be solved with one simple solution. But talk a little bit about the types of projects that you have done and the one in the works. And so how does that, you're a nonprofit, how do you actually get this stuff done, and what's it take to build something?
Takes quite a bit. How much time do we have? Where do I start with that? Well, it does start with identifying a viable site. And so on the coast, we're governed by the Local Coastal Program. And the Local Coastal Program, or the LCP, only identifies three sites in the mid-coast area that's viable for affordable housing. So the site that the Moss Beach project, Cypress Point, is proposed to be on has been identified as a priority affordable housing site for a long time in the coastside community. So in that case, that's how we identified that site, and it was for sale in 2015, and MidPen put in the bid, and we are under contract with the owner to purchase that land. And it just happens in other situations, you know, just depends on the land. But sometimes we lease, sometimes we buy outright. Sometimes it's public land that has been underutilized. So something else that's been popular, but that we're seeing more and more of is teacher housing. So a lot of school properties or district, you know, campuses have a surplus of land. And folks are starting to see how can we retain our teachers and paraeducators, and are starting to talk to developers like MidPen on how to do that and how to utilize their land for that. So that's how it kind of starts. And then we go in on the design. We work with the community. I see some familiar faces here tonight. So some of you were at our open houses back in 2016, where we came to the community and said, we know there was a former plan for this site in Moss Beach. What's your vision? And we kind of worked with the community there. What was formerly planned for the site was 148 units. We heard loud and clear that that was not something that the community wanted to see. And our final proposal, or our current proposal, is for 71 units, all at low-income levels. And previously, it was cited for market rate with 21% affordable. And at the low income and moderate rate, so just a different target than what we do. And just so folks know, when I say affordable housing or low income housing, it does vary. But MidPen's typical is 30 to 60% of the area median income. In San Mateo County, the area median income for a family of four is $166,000. So we're looking at families of four that make about, you know, 50,210. That's generally the population we're serving. And it does vary depending on the property, but that is generally the population we're serving.
So in a looking forward, what's the expectation about when this could be completed and there might be homes available?
I thought you said you were having easy questions for me tonight. I don't know. The current status of the project is it was submitted for a coastal development permit to the County of San Mateo over the summer in 2022. It's undergoing a full EIR, and the timeline will be, you know, the processing timeline that the county controls. We actually have no control over that. Typically, we see a project go through a full EIR in about a year to a year and a half. And then also, because I know some folks in the room are very familiar with the project, several years ago, in 2018, we submitted for the site to be rezoned. And so we did go to the county for that, and that went to the State Coastal Commission. So that was the action that already happened, because I know there's some confusion about where the project's at, and it's already been approved. It actually hasn't been approved for what we've proposed. The rezoning was approved, though.
Okay. So the opportunity to build more homes is theoretically there, but this is complicated and time-consuming and expensive just to get through the whole process. But thank you for continuing to push on it. And you mentioned that there are a couple of other places on the coast that are mid-coast that are possible sites. Did I hear you right?
There are three sites that are identified in the local coastal program as priority affordable housing sites. The other two we don't think are viable. They're not for sale. And also the topography of the land just makes it harder for development. I think one of them's by the airport and has, you know, those restrictions as well.
Right, great. So Gopi, one of the possible answers to helping address this issue more quickly and at a reasonable cost is to innovate and provide new forms of housing. And you're an entrepreneur who's done some of that. I'd love to hear you talk a little about what ADUs are for those who don't know them, and then what you're doing with ADU Works, and then how you think about this topic.
Sure. My son Ryan started going to work in San Francisco and very quickly ran into rental issues and so on. And it started me thinking about this particular problem of young people not being able to live in the area they grew up in. Very quickly they simply cannot afford to rent. They move away into better economies. And that triggered the thought for me about affordable housing. And I had just started this fund called Lifeboat Ventures, which really was focused on what I call the age of disasters. You know, California has COVID, fires, droughts, atmospheric rivers, landslides. So people are struggling. What kind of companies can solve these kinds of problems? And one of the things that ends up happening is in the economic crisis or COVID, people lose their jobs. And they cannot, they lose their houses a lot of times. So luckily, the state has passed a number of laws recently that give an opportunity. The laws are about, one set of them are about what we call ADUs, accessory dwelling units. Essentially, it's a granny unit, and the state now allows a granny unit to be added to any single family residence in the state. Not only one, but actually two. One can be detached, one can be attached. So this has now become possible. It's completely legal. Not only that, the state essentially overrode the process in all the cities and counties, because typically it's the cities and counties and the local folks that create the objections for it. So they said, here are the standards to make this happen, so that it's a lot easier, right? Less fees, things like that. So that gave an opportunity, and I thought, well, you know, people can still do it in certain locations. A extra unit typically costs about $250,000. On top of it, you have contracting, you have permitting, you have all these other processes. So most folks simply can't do this, right? And I see that there's a lot of people that need something like this. Retired folks, right? They're asset rich but cash poor. They get $20,000 in Social Security, and that's it, right? At some point, eggs cost $8, right? So they get forced into selling their house and moving to Idaho, right? And they don't have their hospitals, their doctors, their family, etc. So that's a population. single-parent families, or single-income families, or young people. They all have the same trouble. So what we came up with is this startup called ADU Works, and its fundamental proposal is that we can build a very good quality, affordable unit in your backyard, and we'll take care of all the permitting, all the contracting, and all of that. And the cheapest unit is about $140,000, right? If you have that, if you have a backyard, and if you can put this unit in your backyard, you can rent it out for $2,500 to $3,000, and that typically is enough to pay a mortgage. So suddenly the family, the homeowner, becomes more resilient. The money, instead of going elsewhere, is staying in the community, right? And you're making place for young people, you're making place for service workers, you're making place for elders, etc. And this virtuous cycle can be created with this particular unit, right? And for that reason, we started ADU Works, and we only create what we call B Corps, which are essentially what are called public benefit corporations. So they have a higher mission than just making money. They have a mission, and they cannot be sued if they make a choice to prioritize people over profit. So that's really what we created.
So tell me a little bit more, if I'm a homeowner and interested in having an ADU on my property, what do I have to do, and that, what does ADU Works do to enable that?
So I want to call out a couple of founders of ADU Works that are here, Conrad and Kevin. Definitely please ask them more detailed questions. So you simply have to go in to the website, adu.works, and there will be three options. There's a one bedroom, one bath, two bedroom, one bath, and a two bedroom, two bath units. And you pick the one that you're interested in, and they will contact you and figure out if it will fit, and then work with you to take the order and essentially go through the process of building it. They've set up a showroom in Hayward, so an actual unit is built out there, so you can actually go in and walk through it and see what the unit will be like, and then continue with them as they do their phases, and you pay accordingly, and they'll help you with financing. They'll help you with the permitting, all of that stuff they'll take care of. So that's how we make it happen.
And the time frame from someone saying, I'm interested in doing something, to where someone might be able to move in is how long?
So it's a startup, so there's a lot of initial things we have to do. How to reduce the cost and still keep the quality is one of those things, right? So we have to find material and products that are approved by the house building code of the US. Because if you have a brand new thing and you're innovating, they simply will just reject it. So we found such things like, there's something called a structural insulated panel, or SIP. So it's about a 4 feet wide, 8 feet tall panel with insulation built in. So you don't do stick frames, you don't do drywall, you don't do all of that. So it's much, much faster, right? So we had to figure that out, test it out, etc. And now we are ready, we built the unit. Our goal, and we have some learning curve and some time that's going on right now, but our goal is once you sign on, in 3 months, you should be moving ready. Yeah, that's our goal.
I heard a little bit gasping. this is why I wanted to come and talk to us about, if we're going to make a dent in these sorts of issues, we need everything that we're talking about. We need to have the city, the county, and the state encouraging and supporting and insisting that these get up more quickly. We need to have nonprofit affordable housing builders have properties that are available and ensure that they're built. And we need to have substantial innovation. And I, full disclosure, have been a huge fan and a huge proponent of ADU since they first came out. They've worked very well in other parts of the world, in Toronto and in Canada. They're a big part of the housing solution because it can be done much more quickly and much more cheaply. and the homeowner's interest is aligned with having another unit there. So it's just a very different equation than having, in concept, everyone wants to have more affordable housing, except they don't want it anywhere near them. And this is, I think, a pretty interesting possible solution. So thank you for raising it. So I'm going to ask one more quick round with everyone, and then we'll open it up for Q&A. So Joaquin, in addition to being a really knowledgeable and important advocate for this community, you're also an elected official now. And so I have to ask you the elected official questions. So how is the city of Half Moon Bay, and in concert with the county? I saw Ray was here a moment ago, or but he was here listening to it, and it's an important topic to him. What is the city and county doing to think about and actually help accelerate the production of affordable housing in, for our community?
Thank you. Okay, so I need to make a couple of things clear. I wear two hats. So some of my answers come from wearing these two hats. And two things came to mind when I was listening to, you know, you talk about affordable housing, is smart development and sustainable. Those are two things, right? And I'm gonna say, you know, from one of the hats, is that does not work, you know, the size, they do not work for the community in need right now. We need housing, but we need to make sure that it's in a way that the families in need is gonna be sustainable for them. I mean, I looked at the site that you have here in Moss Beach. You know, it's a beautiful site, but it doesn't have the infrastructure to, it's gonna benefit our community. I mean, just looking at it. And another thing, ADUs, they do not work for the families in need right now. We don't wanna, I mean, on my part, I don't wanna see a community half on Bay that's gonna be overrun by ADUs. That's not what we want. That's not what, that, I mean, that's not what we're, that's not what I'm advocating for. We need housing that can give, you know, Cristal and her sister, Perla, and her brother, Angel, you know, the space they need to grow up healthy. So that's why I'm more, you know, sustainable and smart development to no cost of anybody else. Right, so that's what I'm thinking. I was listening very, you know, and it's great ideas to build. We need them, but like I said, those are not, that's not what we need right now. As an elected official, you know, the city of Half Moon Bay, you know, the county, you know, are really working really close together. You know, we have I think, you know, a great, you know, city manager that really cares about the community. You know, and his, I mean, him and his staff really have been working around the clock. And you have, please, we have to recognize the work that is being done by our city staff. I mean, it's being done.
You're here again, Matt. You were here at the last.
You know, him, you know, caring about our community, working together with our nonprofits, and then his knowledge about working with the county. You know, and having a, you know, I think, you know, Ray, he came, you know, just in time, you know, in this position, you know, to take care of, you know, of the community. Ray is a person that shows up. He's been here from day one, even before he was elected. Right, so, you know, he knows, you know, about what's going on. He has been up to the farms. He's visited, like, you know, the coast several times. You know, too bad he left. No, he didn't hear, but I don't tell him. I said that. But you know, that's you know, that's what we understand what is needed right now. All right, I mean, knowing and hearing and reading articles is one thing, but when you actually see it in person, when you have a conversation with the families that are struggling to find housing, and then you connect those stories to the city and to the county, it's that we create a community that we want. You know, a community of unity that we have been asking for, right? You know, and I understand, you know, I understand about, you know, our kids coming back, you know, home and staying, you know, in the ADU, that's all good, right? But we have right now, we have families that in need, you know, in the county, in the city of Half Moon Bay, are, in my opinion, are doing, you know, excellent work, you know, to make sure that the families in need right now, you know, have that housing that they need. Smart development and sustainable.
Okay. So just one quick follow-up then, as with your city council hat on, if you want to have more sustainable smart housing quickly for the population you're talking about, what are the things that we could do that would help with that? Are there things in the works or things that we should be trying to do? What can people advocate for? You know, well, what are things that can help?
Anybody knows who ran the planning and the coastal commission? So we have to be able to get the message across, right? To be able, we have sites in the city of Half Moon Bay. We have, will be sustainable, it be a smart development that, you know, in a way, you know, the infrastructure that works in the community, you can walk. You can walk to work, you can walk to school, you can walk to your shopping. You know, that's the type of development that we're looking for, right? Less vehicles on the road, something that will be safe, you know, and, you know, in the near future for the bicycles. And that's, you know, I mean, with traffic going down 92 in the morning or in the afternoon, you have to think about less vehicles. Let me give you an example. 71 units in Moss Beach. That means at least two people would need to have a car. So that's how many cars is that? That's 140 cars, 142 cars, right? More on the road. Public transportation, where's the public transportation? The elementary school, it's about 3 miles away. The nearest farm is about 3 miles south on the highway. So if the farm workers don't drive, they don't probably transport. I mean, they have to ride their bicycle. So it's about thinking, you know, once it is built, you know, how think about transportation. Are we able to handle 140 cars on the road? Can we? I mean, and just thinking about the kids not driving. So once the kids become of age, you know, because they're gonna grow up and drive to high school, that means three more cars on the road, right? So, you know, when we have the smart development, sustainable downtown, that you can take your, ride your bike a mile to school, because I did that when I was in high school. I rode my bicycle 1 mile to school and a mile back, or walk. You know, if I worked, you know, at the local fast food restaurants, I walked, I didn't drive. The clinic is downtown, so, you know, so it's, you know, so it's about the type of thinking that, you know, that we need to focus on that more than just, I mean, we need it right now, we need it, you know, 10 years ago, but we have to be smart in the smart development.
Okay, I'm going to ask you one more question and then I'll turn it over to Serena. So are there locations that would be appropriate for that kind of development that are available in proximate Half Moon Bay that we can accelerate the production of the kind of housing that we're talking about on?
There are several locations. You know, I'm not gonna point them out, you know, for several reasons, you know, but we have the locations. You know, there's some sites that are actually for sale. They're available, they're in the market, right? That will be in Midpen, I know about them. You know, and that's a, you know, that's what we're looking for, right? Something with taste, something that's sustainable, something like it would be like a smart development.
Okay, that's encouraging. So Serena, I'm not gonna put you on the spot with specific locations, but you've been through this process about
yes.
How you actually get things like Joaquin is talking about done, and I'm sure you agree that the more they're sustainable and appropriate, the better off we are.
Right.
And you built some of those in downtown Half Moon Bay, so.
Right, and we are aware that there are some sites in Half Moon Bay that could be feasible, but we have seen the data on jobs and housing balances up in the Mid-Coast, and it's needed there too. So we can respectfully disagree about the location, but I do want to note that the LCP, in making it a priority affordable housing site, has mandated that there's an allocation for sewer and water reserve for the site. And we lessened the intensity that it was zoned for. So it's not for 148 households, it's for 71, which I know is still a lot, especially in a town like Moss Beach. But we need to find the balance and make, you know, I think you called it a drop in the bucket earlier, Lenny. I agree that it's still a drop in the bucket, but it is something that's tangible. It's in the pipeline, and this could be housing that could be built in the next few years if we want it to be built. And you know, it's great to start with sites, but we work on sites for years before the building actually happens. And I think we all agree that these folks need their homes now. In regards to the traffic, we all face the traffic issues living in the Bay Area. I'm over the hill in San Bruno, so I know it's a little bit different on this side. I face a lot of traffic as well, and I always think about that and hear about it when we talk about developments in every neighborhood. And I don't want to disrespect the coastline without acknowledging that it is different on this side. I would never dispute that. I will also say that we worked with the county to put a local preference so that hopefully these are cars that are already, these are people already in the community. And hopefully we're lessening their trips or, you know, and there's no way for me to know exactly who is going to be living there and the patterns, but their traffic patterns. But I will say for any property where we have a local lease-up preference, we've always filled all of those units with a local preference because the need is there. And so, and just to contextualize that, you know, with other properties in San Mateo County, we will have a number of units for people that live or work in the neighborhood or in the immediate area. And that is defined, by the way, through a fair housing analysis. I know lots of folks always ask me, how do you guys decide? It's not really, we can't really define it ourselves. There has to be a fair housing analysis done, and it has to be looked at by the jurisdiction. So with all that aside, I do think that the folks that will be living at Cypress Point should be built are going to be the people that are living in the community.
And from your perspective, what would help accelerate the opportunity to make projects like this happen at a quicker and more affordable pace? Why does this take as long like you mentioned, the Coastal Commission is one example, but I mean, why is this so hard?
Well, we live in California, thankfully, so we do have a lot of restrictions around, you know, community input, design review, environmental review, and those are all processes that, you know, I wouldn't say are abnormal or shouldn't be there. That's all fine. For Moss Beach, I know a lot of folks, that project, people say, how come it's taken 7 or 8 years? There was the two-step process of rezoning the site, so going to the State Coastal Commission during the pandemic as well, actually, that put a pause to a lot of processing. That also elongated the time. But I would say for affordable housing developers like MidPen, financing is a huge deal. There is not enough financing to go around on the demand and the folks who do what I do. So there's a lot of competition for the financing that we do get. So that would be, I think,
that more. Okay, great. So, Kopi, if we wanted to accelerate the implementation of ADUs, not just on the coast, but more generally in the places, because ADU Works isn't just for the coast, you're Bay Area-wide, at least California-wide. So California has adopted a set of laws that make this a preferred way to build housing in a lot of places. So what can be done to accelerate the production and development of more ADUs in places that are needed?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this for a little bit of time. I'm on the board of directors of Coastside Children's Program, and one of my colleagues is here. So we've been talking about this. Many may not know that teachers sometimes, credentialed teachers, make less than McDonald's pay. And health coverage sometimes is only 50%. And their biggest cost is housing. So we've been thinking about like how to take out that particular problem for teachers. And the second item I'd like to think about is how many times the word quick and now showed up, right? So there's a number of systemic problems with the way Californian society and economy has developed. EIRs, large units, zoning. There is no way you can do anything quick 2015 is when Midpen, I'm so glad Midpen exists. I was all over the Vast Beach project trying to, you know, help and so on. But it's 23 now, and we cannot even tell it when it's gonna be available. There's other things coming up still, right? So if we found a site, you're still looking at 10 years. What part of it is gonna go away? Nothing is gonna go away, right? You cannot change it. So the kind of thought I had was, you know, some of you may have seen the on Main Street, right behind Ocean Blue Real Estate, there's like this sort of Mediterranean house, and behind that there are these 6 units. You may have seen that, right? And think of AD Works as like, you know, AD Works is a company that's doing ADUs, but it's really a bunch of good quality affordable buildings, right? The state law now allows 3 living entities in a single lot, right? If you could put 3 of those buildings in a single lot, right? Wrap it with a condo type arrangement so that the folks in there actually own that unit and put it in town so transportation is not an issue. Give extra security, right? Make them part of the community, not isolate them, not ghettoize them, not let them get taken advantage of, right? Put them right there. And none of these has to be, you know, it's all within the law, the CCP, the LCP will approve it because it's essentially just a single house in town, no view impact, etc. You can create this, and each of those units could be for $200,000, plus the lot, another $300,000. You can get the whole thing done for $1 million, and you can put 3 families of farm workers in town, where they can interact with other families and the modeling that everybody needs can happen, et cetera, right? So this is very doable. And the 10-year, 20-year, 10-year, 15-year process actually ends up in each affordable use housing costing $750,000, one unit. You can do this, and you have to do nothing. You can do it in the city. You can do it all over the county. There's tons of infill lots. This is very doable. There's like anybody can really start that process today. So that's what I would propose. This is how. This you can do within 6 months. You can immediately start putting farm workers in these properties.
Okay, great. I think it's about the time that we could go to the audience. So raise your hands and we'll go. So Hal, and then here, and then Rebecca.
So first of all, the city does have a lot of infill lots, but it has a limited number of water connections available, and the projects which appear before the city on infill lots tend to be large houses, not even the smaller houses that, you know, characterize, say, Arleta Park. And, you know, larger lots like the Pie Slice by the villages at the south end of Main Street where it meets the highway are proposed for visitor-serving hotels, which will need more workers who can't live here. How does the city, reorient its priorities, to allow and perhaps only allow beneficial financial use of these properties with limitations so that they meet those needs rather than the most profitable, potential build to the sky and to the property lines and sell the highest price house or build a hotel. And then, looking beyond the firehouse where the Johnston House is and the field in front of it, that's outside the urban-rural boundary. And, is it possible or necessary or appropriate, to work with the county and the state to expand the ability to provide housing for farm workers and so on and teachers beyond, what is currently the city limits of Half Moon Bay, just as Moon Ridge currently is beyond the city limits of Half Moon Bay, which is something I'm not sure a lot of people realize.
Mr. City Councilperson, Vice Mayor, do you want to take that one to start?
Sure. So what was the question again? Okay, so we know to do the low-income housing, you can get three units per connection to minimum cost. If it's a market, you know, rate housing, you know, like the water connection, it's almost triple the cost. Right, so you know, the benefit, you know, when building low-income housing, you know, you can actually, the density of it is our benefit. That will happen in the senior housing on Main, the housing on South Main, you know, and that's what we're looking for. So that's our focus, right? Because we know who's in need of housing. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of articles have been coming out about what is the income of a family. Less than $50,000 a year. Rocío, ¿cuánto gana usted y su esposo? ¿Cuánto ganan por año ustedes? ¿Cuáles son sus ingresos? I'm asking Rocío what's her income, you know, family income. So there's five members in the family, and they with $35,000 a year. And for more than 11 years, he was making less than $11 an hour. So that's what we have in our community. Okay, so that's what we're talking about, building low-income housing. Water connections, we have them. You know, they're available. And of course, you know, it's different. They view low-income housing, you know, but what's the profit to the city? But it's not about money. Right, it's here about the need of our community. It's about taking care of our community. That's why it's called, you know, affordable low-income housing for farm workers.
But how do you, whether you're in the city, to only approving those things and not, you know, just continuing hotels and larger houses?
Jim, you want to answer that question?
No, go ahead. Well, the microphone's gone.
So, no, our focus right now, like I say, no, who's been advocating for housing? Which communities need of housing? Right, I mean, if you remember, we have over 264 houses are empty, that are vacation homes, right, pretty much. So by our low-income community, farm workers and our essential workers, are in need of housing. So that's why the CDAP committee, we are focused, you know, our main focus right now is to do that, to develop, you know, low-income housing. We need housing for teachers as well. You know, teachers, I don't know what era make less than, you know, the McDonald's workers, but, you know, teachers make a little bit more than, you know, than a farm worker. Even as a young teacher, you know, you make almost double as a day you do as a farm worker. So, but like I said, our focus is to provide for the families that are in need right now. We need teachers too. No, don't get me wrong, we need teachers too, right? But that's, you know, for more than a year, you know, actually close to a year, you know, there's been these vigils for the people that are in low income, less than $50,000 a year for a family of five.
Go ahead. Oh, Hal, I just want to add on. The cities are required to do a housing element where they identify sites for housing. And I think that's where some community members could start with advocacy and making sure that the sites that could be for affordable housing or certain populations that could be identified and start to be documented in the city's goals and plans.
Hey, so I come out of a corporate environment and, you know, I lead big, long-term, year-long, you know, multi-year projects. And one of the things that I always find useful is to set the vision for what success looks like. And I haven't yet heard, what is the target? How many family homes do we need? Like, according to current need, and I know the need flexes and it grows and stuff, but Joaquin, from your perspective, how many family homes are desperately needed, like, right now? Because I've heard this is what Moss Beach will get us, and there's these sites, and there's some, but I don't know what success looks like. So how many family homes do we need right now?
For half of Bay Alum?
Yeah.
For the coast?
For the coast.
For But we're talking about 1,000. 1,000 new homes that are needed.
To house the existing farm worker population,
and the, or essential
not including the teachers and stuff, but just the farm workers.
Farm workers and essential workers.
Okay.
You know, that's about what we need in the San Mateo Coast. We're talking about from Montera all the way to the county line.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. It just helps me to have
well, the city, including City of Half Moon Bay. So in the City of Half Moon Bay, we also have, we have most of our farm worker community, essential workers, they're in the City of Half Moon Bay.
Right.
Moon Ridge is not Half Moon Bay. It's right on the outskirts of Half Moon Bay, unincorporated. And they're crowded.
And Moon Ridge is crowded. 1,000 additional homes or 1,000 total?
Additional. Yeah.
Okay.
Thinking about the additional, what would be the additional homes?
Okay.
That would be something that I know it's. We think about it. It was always not doable, but I think it's that we need it.
Because I feel like for this community to come together and get a thing done, we got to understand what we're shooting for. We need a target. We need a big old thermometer downtown.
That 1,000.
Up to the 1,000, and then we can declare victory and move on to the next thing. But, it's having that number is helpful.
Okay, great. In the back, and then we'll come over here.
Hi. Hello?
Yes.
I would like to make a pitch for MidPen. That I do Meals on Wheels twice a week. So I see, and I get to the MidPen facility on Main Street in Half Moon Bay. And it's hard for me to express the quality of that facility, how well it's maintained, how nice it is, but even more so, when I knock on a door and the person answers, they get a meal on wheels, it's like they hit the lottery. I mean, the people that live in those MidPen facilities, it's just a joy to see how their life has improved and changed as a result of living there. So I'm a really big fan of MidPen. The second thing is that our family happens to have an ADU. It's called an in-law apartment. The woman that lives there is a teacher. Well, she's an administrator at Kings Mountain. Has her daughter, 10 years old. Having them within the neighborhood so amplifies just the joy of being there. To see the girl playing with the other girls in the neighborhood, it's a real joy. So, an ADU is not something that you sort of tolerate. It adds to the neighborhood. It really does. And the third one is the MidPen project in Moss Beach. I'd like to see it happen tomorrow, because I think from what I've seen downtown, that project, if it's anything even close to being as good as what the one downtown is, it is a real benefit for the community. Thank you.
Blue light. I actually have a question for Joaquin, and I have one for Gobi. So Joaquin, one of the things that really moved me with the terrible situation that we had with the shootings was the amazing passion that was expressed by Gavin Newsom, by our senator, by our supervisor. Their eyes were open to the need for farm worker housing. And my question is anything happening at those levels? What's happening at the state level? What's happening at the county level in order to do something about the problem that we have here, not only here, but with farm worker housing throughout the state of California? Has anything been proposed?
Yeah, actually, yes. There's been a lot of things happening that, unfortunately, we can't share about them right now. But there's a lot of things happening, that are going to be happening in the next couple of years. And we are in contact, we're in communication with the governor's office. We know about the budget that is available for farm worker housing, in the state of California. And some of the, you know, some of the millions of, I believe they, it was $200 million available for farm worker housing. And some of the money will be coming, you know, to the county. Like I mentioned, our city manager or city staff, you know, in collaboration with the county staff, you know, with our supervisor, there's been a lot of work done. And there's a lot of ongoing things. And like I mentioned, you know, it's it feels good to be part of the city of Half Moon Bay and to do this community, all the things that are happening right now. And that's about the only thing I can share with you, but things are happening and they are supporting our cause about building farm worker housing.
That's great to hear. I'm really happy to hear that. Gopi, I got a question for you about ADUs, because I've often wondered, you know, this is a great concept, but what proportion of ADUs are actually used for long-term housing as opposed to short-term housing or an additional room, you know, or an office or a studio? Do you have any data on that? Has there been anything made available, like in our area where ADUs are allowed, or in the state of California? Do you know?
So ADUs in the sense of in-law units have existed, as he said, and I, in my house, have an in-law unit, and it's just another rental place, so they have the same statistics, more or less. People come in, live there 3 or 4 or 5 years, they move on. That's what you see normally. As a matter of fact, my son Ryan, he got married last year, and they got pregnant, and he moved back. So it's like the exact thing we want to have happen. So he's living there with his new baby. So that's kind of how it works out, just like any other rental. But the real thing about the for the issue of farm worker housing, ADUs can fill the gap, right? Like El Granada probably has about 2,000 houses, right? For a 3,500 population. I would imagine that 20% can easily have ADUs. So now you have 400 units potentially for rental, right? That's like the minimum thing. But my interest is really to get to changing creating a scalable solution across the state of California for all farm workers. So one of the problems when you're at that level is upward mobility. If you don't own your house, you don't have your starter home. You never get to the next level. So if you could do this thing in an infill lot anywhere in the state of California, and you can do 3 units, and you can get them to own it, that's a starter home. The farm worker now has equity. Now they can move, when they move on, they can go to the next house, right? That's really what I'm hoping for. Not ADUs per se, but the building that's designed to be used in this new configuration. 3 units per lot. Okay.
Sorry, I lost me. There we go, and then back.
Thank you. Suzanne Moore from Pacifica. And it's been said that the cheapest way to solve our housing crisis is to keep people who are currently housed. In fact, our Fair Housing Act and the Association of Bay Area's Governments recommend that in our housing elements, we put anti-displacement language. So my question for your team is, how are we hoping to do that in our housing element for Half Moon Bay and unincorporated San Mateo County?
Next question.
Any holistic view about solving a housing problem has to deal with displacement, and that's absolutely got to be part of it. And so, Gopi, if you have a more specific answer, I would say, yes, you're right. I don't know the specifics about the coast or happening on that front.
Yeah, to just explain further, if they own their homes, the farm workers own their homes, there is no displacement, right? That solution solves a problem. It solves a problem of community. It solves a problem of transportation. So all these folks, and this solution can easily work for all the essential workers as well, though initially we want to work on farm workers, but we do need help from the government, right? There is possibility, like they give loans to help the homeowner. They need emergency permitting, but the ultimate goal should be a permanent solution that works across the state. Should be about home ownership, so that they get to that next level.
Okay. To me, we need to be looking at how do we combine interests among people who need housing or different housing than they currently live in. For example, I belong to two different boards. One is for children, preschool children. Their teachers are very low income, and this is an enormous problem in finding teachers on the coast side. The other group are seniors, and I know a number of seniors who are single and living in large houses. They'd like to move somewhere else, but the somewhere else isn't there. So an ADU, for example, is one possibility. You could give up your home, and in my case, it would be a four-bedroom home that I'd like to move out to, if I could find some incentive and assistance in finding something smaller. And the other thing I'm thinking is, Gobi used the word ADU, but the structures you're talking about are really tiny homes, aren't they? That could just as well be on that lot you're talking about with accommodate three homes?
No, tiny houses have like a specific definition. They have to be 8 feet wide so that they can be transported on the back of trucks. These are not tiny homes.
But they could be built.
They could be built because the smallest footprint is 400 square feet, which is a one bedroom, one bath. And the largest one is 750. Your lots are typically 5,000 square feet. There is ample space, typically, unless you have some other, you know, trees or too steep a slope or something like that. So this is very easily doable, the vast majority of cases.
Okay, thank you. In the back. Did it work? We'll
give you another one. Hold on. Go ahead now.
Two.
Oh, there we go. Hi, good evening. My name is Ace Velarde. I'm actually a founder of ADU Works. I kind of walked in late, so it's like here in the back. So I was kind of listening into the conversation. It's all very, eye-opening and things. I want to shed some light on a few things and ask a question to the panel. So actually to the last question, there's a certain connotation when it comes to ADUs being tiny homes, et cetera, and so forth, right? That's not necessarily the case. There are different categories and how homes are built, right? The ADU Works solution at the price that Gopi explained, our cheapest unit is $140,000, is built on site. They are not manufactured homes that get trucked to your home and then placed. We lay down a foundation and we'll build it up from scratch, right? So the purpose and the reason why we exist is to tackle the affordable housing crisis, right? So our housing solutions can be permitted as ADUs, right? And we've actually been approached by homeowners who buy an empty lot and want to utilize our homes as the primary home, right? So it's not a tiny home as per, you know, what you see, and that's a fine solution, nothing wrong with it, but that's not what we do. It's strictly foundation, ground built homes, whether it's permanent, your primary home, or in this case, in most cases, actually it's ADUs. Two questions ago, the lady up here asked how many of these are actually long-term housing and how many are not, right? From our actual data, 50% of our customers want to build them for a family member because they want to keep them within the community, right? So let's say a family and their child or their mother or in-laws, they want to keep them close but be separate. The other 50% is for 1 year or more type housing, right? In one specific case, it was just for short-term housing for traveling nurses, but it was really specifically to help, you know, provide the services to the local community. So ADUs are a solution in and of itself. Now, separately, we do have a Sherman Hayward, and we've actually been approached by large development corporations, not necessarily here on the coast side, but in other areas of California and in other states to utilize our solution for their affordable housing in their areas, right? Because when they looked at it, because it's foundation ground up, it's not tiny home, it's not manufactured, it's not trucked in, it's not trailer homes, right? They see it as a viable solution for their development plans, right? Those things take time, obviously, as in all things, right? You know, California has a lot of requirements to be able to get through. Our build process on site only takes 60 days. Once it's done, from breaking ground to giving you the keys to your ADU or your home, if that's the case, is 60 days. We actually have builds going up in Napa right now, in East Bay, all the way around, and we're going through the permitting process here in San Mateo. I guess the question for the panel, just in general, I don't know if I can answer this, our biggest challenge, and I'm sure it's a challenge for any homeowner or anybody trying to put any homes anywhere, right, that's been identified, is the permitting process, right? We've jumped through all the hoops that need to do, we work with the jurisdictions to be able to make it happen, right, because we want to prove that this is an absolute viable solution, right? So as Gopi was mentioning before, we need kind of some assistance to kind of move these things along, right? And in some cases it gets halted, right? And we are doing jurisdictions from here all the way down to Southern California, right up to the border in San Diego and Tijuana, right? So we're building ADUs all over, including here, actually. As I mentioned, we have about four, I believe, that are being permitted through this side on the coast, through the county of San Mateo. I guess my question is, right, is there any way to help expedite or simplify the process? I mean, and I don't speak just for us, right? It's kind of what we do, but even for a homeowner that decides to do their own ADU separately, right? Is there any type of alleviation or assistance that we can have with time, right? The time it takes to get to the permitting. Because we can own, that's one thing that nobody has control over, whether it's the homeowner, ourselves, or elsewhere, we can do the build. But is there anything that we can do or we can have to be able to expedite that process? Thank you.
Like I said, you know anybody with the Coastal Commission? You know, that's the thing, you know, we have, I mean, we know there is a need, you know, to build, you know, and permits is what's keeping, you know, our community from building. You know, the thing that just happened, you know, the tragedy that happened, you know, in last month, you know, that's actually going to help us expedite a lot of things. Not only here in our community, but across California. You know, so I mean, we are going to be looked at as, you know, somebody, a community that actually made a change for farm workers and essential workers. Because it's going to happen. And then that's we have, when we just have to pay attention, you know, and don't lose our place. You know, let's not forget about, you know, how, I mean, what I said the other day, you know, if we really care about farm workers, we got to do something about it. If we just talk about it, oh, you know, it happened, you know, too bad. It's happening all over the place. Yeah, of course. But if we really care about our farm community, you know, the ones that are hurting right now, we're going to get things done, and then we're never going to lose our place, and housing is going to be built for them. And expediting is happening.
With the microphone, okay.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah, it's on.
Hello, okay. I'm Sophia Lane. I'm with the Cabrillo Unified School District Governing Board. So just want to say that as context for, I'm really, really thrilled to hear all the support for educator workforce housing, because we are looking at that as a possibility for educators here on the coast. As Gopi and others have mentioned, it's really excruciatingly difficult to recruit highly qualified educators when more detail for K-12. The state basically indicates funding to just be based on certain demographics without any kind of regional cost of living difference. So we are at a severe disadvantage here in the Bay Area, and particularly here on the coast side, relative to other places over the hill that are funded at three times the levels that we are. I can talk your ears off of that. I won't do that. You know where to find me if you want to know any more about that. But my question for the panelists was, because our needs for affordable housing are so heterogeneous among different populations of essential workers, be they farm workers or be they educators. Even with among educators, we have yard duty folks earning the minimum wage, and we have teachers at the top end of the spectrum, you know, earning a lot more than that. To what extent does that heterogeneous need, like, kind of dictate we have to have a heterogeneous approach to the solution? So sometimes it will be ADUs, sometimes it will be units somewhere up north, sometimes it'll be infill here, you know, south, sometimes it's something we haven't even thought about yet. So I would love to hear from each of you, like, you know, how, to what extent do we need a heterogeneous solution because of that heterogeneous need?
I guess I would say most of our properties in our portfolio do have that approach with the income qualification, and that captures, you know, a wide range of folks, working folks, and the type of jobs they do. I think with the teachers and paraeducators piece, it's a little bit trickier. I think through their asset of having land and being able to provide, essentially what it is employer housing is what it becomes. And I think that folks saw that that was a faster way to get teachers in and to guarantee that there would be retention. And so that's why we're seeing that kind of take off. Otherwise, I mean, I think the approach to on who to house really does start with the community. If you want, if your community has a special need, it's about getting it in getting documented as a goal and a policy and a focus for your leaders and your decision makers.
So I think all the solutions have to work together in that the large housing communities like Moon Ridge, et cetera, have to be built. There should be ADUs because it is easy to add to the community and creates more housing and, you know, adds value to the homeowner. And we also need this new kinds of ways of solving the problem, like I mentioned. And farm worker communities is a very acute problem that we have. But essential workers, teachers, this is a chronic problem, right? This has existed and it will continue to exist. And we need faster solutions that can happen immediately, right? There are, the city approached me. I have a property on downtown Half Moon Bay. And they asked, like, could we put some of these units there for the families? There are about 19 families affected in the farms that where the shooting occurred. And, you know, I was completely willing to accommodate that. So let's set up a few units and they can be there. But I felt that it's still a short-term solution. What I would like to do is to, you know, work and say, look, there are 19 families. Let's use this model. And in a year, they should all have their own houses. And you have a permanent solution. You solve the problem forever. You don't have to go back and look at it again. And once you can do that, piece at a time, a single lot at a time, it can be replicated anywhere in the state. And it adds value to everybody involved, the city, the community. It's affordable. So the city and the county have to say, okay, this is a mechanism that we can create that threads the needle of regulation and community opposition and all these other things.
I would like to add something else to what Sophia talked about, you know, job duties and some of the workers at the school district. You know, many of them, you know, another thing we have to think about is also health insurance. It's a big thing. You know, and about 50% of our farm workers don't have health insurance. And their wives are the ones working in the schools, you know, have to be able to get health insurance. You know, so that's, you know, there's a connection between, you know, farm workers and school, I mean, job duties. That would be, I don't know if you're familiar with that. I mean, I am. That's one of the biggest, what's another problem we have here on the coast with the farm worker community. You know, the need for health insurance. You know, there's a lot of reports out there, you know, that, like, you know, like our mental health, you know, our own farm workers, health insurance, some pescadero area, no drinkable water, right? So that's another concern. So there's a lot of things that relate to housing You know, and that's why we have to work together with the school district. You know, they talked about building, you know, housing for their teachers, for their staff, you know, in their property. And that should, I mean, that we should be able to support that as well. But, you know, like I said, you know, ADUs are good ideas, tiny homes are good ideas, but again, you know, don't want to be in a community that we're going to, you know, replace, you know, a housing needed for our whole families. You know, if you have a family of five, they do not qualify for an ADU. You're not going to put a family of five in an ADU. You're going to go to a house, you know, that we have an ADU available to rent, you know, 2,800. As four in the family, sorry, you don't qualify, too many of you. So we have to also have to think about that.
Okay. We have time for a couple more questions in the back, and then the microphone here. Jack.
Good. I'm Jack Higgins. I live in Moss Beach, and I've lived there about 18 years. As a resident and homeowner, I share the concerns of my neighbors about the problems with the new units coming up in Moss Beach. I can't say I'm excited about it, but when you see the size, magnitude of the problem we have, you're talking about 1,000 units, I see that we need to compromise. And maybe we can find ways to mitigate the concerns about traffic and infrastructure and water and so forth. We hope so. But and I can't see standing in the way of making something happen there in Moss Beach. But I agree with Joaquin, something closer to downtown is far superior if there's a way to do it. In terms of ADUs, Joaquin's not at all excited about that. But I think that we need to have a number of different solutions in order to solve a problem of that magnitude, and ADUs may be a part of that. Not good for a large family, not good for having five kids. But if it's a mom and one kid or a couple, an ADU might be an ideal situation for that. And my question, finally, is how many of the ADUs will be used for long-term housing and how many will be vacation homes? Are there restrictions in terms of what people can put in now?
So, back to the cost commission. You know, that's a really good question. You know, if the ADU is going to be a vacation home, is that eventually going to be it? You know, I mean, you can only have registered as a low income or affordable housing, then eventually to go into a vacation home. And we already have too many of those. And we are in a crisis of little housing. So I don't think we need more vacation homes.
Is there a restriction out there that somebody put in ADU saying it's going to be a long time?
To my knowledge, there isn't any restriction, but I think Half Moon Bay was trying to create some kind of a measure related to that, so I'm not sure exactly. But it's a single family home, so the homeowner essentially decides. And we do have, like right across from my house, is a full house that's essentially being Airbnb. There's a point at which the supply is so high that you cannot fill it with vacation people, right? You just have enough, so you'll have that. That's like number one. Number two, the ADUs alleviate the demand, because the folks, the young people, are competing with the farm workers for housing. It drives up. So some of them are elders, they're gonna take the ADUs, it's going to make more options available for these other kind of solutions, either mid-pen or the three-unit lots, so that more are available. So you want people, because there are other, it's 1,000 folks just for these essential workers and so on. How many more thousands do you need for the rest of us, right? So there's a lot of demand. And so you need to kind of not just say, I got to solve the 1,000 person problem, right? You got to solve a larger problem. But that ADUs and others, if you don't do it, what happens is that the pressure starts building. People get upset, right? They want the housing, and they organize. There's an organization called YIMBY, that's in my backyard. They push, regulations change. Why did the state change all these laws? Because people push back, right? So you keep pushing back, and then this massive change happens, and they say, we don't care what you think, this is going to just happen in your neighborhood, right? So we have to relieve the pressure with these small outlets, ADUs, you know, the zoning with R2 and R3 and so on, that allow that to happen so that folks that still want single-family housing can still have it, right? So I think we have to accommodate all the solutions so that the demand, the pressure, doesn't make the part of us that are kind of holding back into becoming activists for more density, right?
Want to share something with you. Yes, so you have an idea about when we talk about low-income housing. Okay, to be clear, so farm workers make an average about $2,000 a month. Okay, ADU costs, you know, to rent is $2,800. It still will not accept, you know, farm workers. Moonridge, I believe they charge the cost of rent in Moonridge. Do you know the cost of rent per house in Moonridge? Average? You have an idea? $1,200. Okay, that's how much they're paying in Moonridge. They can afford that. That's affordable low-income housing right there, farm worker housing. In Half Moon Bay, when you rent an apartment, the families that rent one room in a 2 or 3 bedroom apartment, they're paying over $1,000 per room to share the kitchen, one kitchen, one bathroom. And that's happening right now. So that's when we're talking about ADUs and the cost of, you know, of housing and low-income housing, farm worker housing. You have, with the numbers, you have an idea what is the cost. I think the most a family pays in Moonridge on a 3-bedroom, I think it comes maybe like $1,500 on a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom. Okay, that's pretty much what they can afford. So that's to give you an idea about what type of housing that we need. $2,000 a month, average.
I hate to do this, but we're just about time. So I don't know who has the microphone. James, so you get the final question, and then we'll stick around just for a few more minutes, and I'll do some final announcements and give closing opportunities for everyone. So go ahead.
Thanks, please. Lenny. Jane Batty with Miramar Farms. First of all, thank you all for being here. We need all these solutions, so just so appreciate you working on them all. I guess my question is, we own a small farm property. It's sort of ironic that building housing, an ADU, is not allowed on an agricultural property. It's also not allowed in high fire danger property, which is most of the coast. So we're really in a bind, but we can build temporary housing only, which economically makes no sense at all and doesn't provide any of what you're suggesting we need for a longer term solution. What can we as citizens do to influence the county, in our case outside the city, the county, to modify some of these regulations that may have been well-meaning but are not working?
Actually, the county has a perfect program for you. So Measure K, are you familiar with Measure K? No? Okay, so Measure K is a program the county offers to people that own property, farms. You can actually bring, you know, module units into your property. And that's what we have. Cabrillo Farm has them. Juicy Farm on Higgins, they have 2 units, they're bringing 2 more. Blue House Farm in San Gregorio, they have 4 units, I believe. Jose Ramirez in Pescadero, they have, I believe, 3 units. And this other unit is gonna be put in into different farms in the coast. So actually, if you have a farm, you do qualify under that program, Measure K program, ask the county about it. And those are nice units.
Thank you. So we've only scratched the surface on the topic. Obviously big and complicated and gonna take a while to solve, but I do think today we got a little bit of sense of both the specificity of what the needs are in a tangible way, as well as in way to think about the scale of the challenge, as well as some avenues to do some improvement on this. And my only encouragement would be, let's not just have this be one town hall discussion. This is a horrible set of events that happened, but they only exposed what was going on already. And we need to make sure that we're taking this window of opportunity to make sure that we do something fundamental to address these issues. And I really want to ask you to give me a round of applause for what